Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. The history of liquor in one of the nation's driest states? Well, you may think there wouldn't be much of a story to tell about alcohol in Utah, but not so. A new documentary takes us from pioneer breweries to prohibition to today's thriving brew pubs and wineries. And today on the program, we're taking a look at the Beehive State's remarkable history of pouring a drink, as shown in the new documentary Beehive Spirits. Joining me by telephone is Tyler Meesom. He's a filmmaker whose credits include co-director and producer of the documentary Sons of Perdition, which premiered at the Tribeca Film Festival. And he's also the director of the feature film Take, starring Minnie Driver. He is the producer and director of the new documentary we're talking about today, titled Beehive Spirits. It's part of KUED's Utah Now series, and he joins us by phone from Los Angeles, where he's shooting his new film, An Honest Liar. Tyler Meesom, good morning. Thanks so much for your time today.
Good morning, Jennifer. Thank you for including me.
Beehive Spirits premieres next Tuesday, October 30th at 8:30 p.m. on KUED Channel 7. We'll give you some more details on that as we go. Later on in the program, the launch of Utah's first science news resource. But first, Beehive Spirits. What do you want to know about the colorful characters and the craft of brewing here in Utah? 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Tyler Meesom, you've produced films on a wide range of topics and stories. What got you thinking about delving into the state's liquor history?
Yeah, it was probably liquor, to be honest with you. Look, I live in Salt Lake City. I love Salt Lake City. I love Utah. And while I'm a filmmaker in Salt Lake, which, it's not easy to do that, one can do it. But there are so many rich stories in Utah. And, you know, the essence of any good story is drama, is conflict. And alcohol in Utah is so rife with conflict. There are so many people on either side of the fence who, you know, wish that they could bring back prohibition, or more that wish that they could, have more access to alcohol. So as I dove into the history of alcohol in Utah, I found that it's actually very rich and colorful. And as I met some of these characters who, dare to create liquor in this state, I knew that it would make a really great story. So I went to KUED with it, and we were fortunate enough to be able to do it.
Mm. How much did you know about the history of alcohol in Utah before you started?
You know, I think a lot of people associate the current contemporary politics with liquor in Utah. Not enough licenses, the private clubs, et cetera, et cetera. And that's mainly what people think of. What a lot of people don't know is that the pioneers brewed alcohol very early upon arriving in the state of Utah. You knew some simple things. I mean, there was a lot of rumors that Mormons drank and that there were a lot of brew pubs and that there were a lot of wineries, but I don't think I knew, especially, and a lot of people don't know, how much there really was. I mean, there were breweries that lined the Wasatch Front, and some of them were massive. There was one called Wagner's Brewery, and it took 1.5 city blocks. I mean, imagine 1.5 downtown Salt Lake City blocks. That's the size of Library Square plus half of another block. And it was churning out hundreds of thousands of gallons of beer a year. And there was Whiskey Street, they called it. There was Main Street, which was below Fifth South. It was known as Whiskey Street because it had so many saloons and pubs. So I think what people will be surprised at is how much alcohol pre-prohibition was floating around in this state.
We're speaking with Tyler Meesom. He's a filmmaker, and his latest project is the documentary titled Beehive Spirits. It will be premiering next Tuesday, October 30th at 8:30 on KUED Channel 7. And there's some additional viewing times and some links on our website, kcpw.org. If you've got questions or comments about the history of liquor in Utah, 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255. I want to play a clip from the film Beehive Spirits. This is Rod Decker. He's a KUTV reporter who's writing a book about Utah politics, which certainly involves liquor in Utah. Tyler Meesom, how did you come across Rod Decker and his research into this topic?
You know, Rod Decker is a Utah icon. And when we started to talk about the fact that we are going to do an alcohol documentary, somebody mentioned that he came and spoke to an organization and that he was filled with facts. And we sat down with Rod Decker, and we basically sat him down in front of the camera, and we kind of warmed him up. And he said, okay, Rod, we said, tell us a little bit about alcohol in Utah. And he went for 25 minutes and he didn't stop. And basically we had our whole interview with one question. And he gave names and dates and places and times, and he was perfect and witty, and he sang songs, and he was very, very knowledgeable on the subject. And he's a social drinker as well, so he's on the side of wishing for more alcohol. And he was a perfect little transition from each segment.
Well, this is a segment about the early days of what the Valley looked like when it was full of saloons. I'll play this clip and then get you to react to it. So this is Rod Decker in the documentary Beehive Spirits.
Mormons weren't originally so strongly against liquor as they became. Joseph Smith ran a hotel with a bar in it in Nauvoo. ZCMI stocked liquor. The Hotel Utah served liquor.
Here's a man that would know.
My name's Rod Decker. I'm a reporter at KUTV. I'm writing a book about Utah politics, so I had occasion to look into liquor a little. Salt Lake City had 87, if I remember correctly, saloons before the turn of the 20th century. A lot of saloons. It was a rough western town.
Utah was a major attraction for miners, tourists, people heading west, homesteaders, and they would all be thirsty by the time they reach here. It's a desert.
That last voice is Del Vance. He's the author of the book Beer in the Beehive. Tyler Meesom, I mean, when you hear these stories of, the city literally brimming with saloons, what goes through your mind?
You know, what's interesting about that clip is that it's covered by these phenomenal old photographs of men out in front of bars. And you know those old beautiful photographs where they'd actually pose for a photo and they'd stand out and they'd be wearing hats and mustaches, extended past their face and holding beer mugs. Just these beautiful photographs that we found that just really gave a sense and a flavor of how rough Salt Lake City was at the time.
Certainly.
And how many gin joints there were. Putting myself in that and researching as much as I did, it kind of made me yearn to be there in a way and just have these. Look, I love Salt Lake, and I love the fact that there are a great number of restaurants and bars in this city. Salt Lake is like this teenager that's starting to grow up, and it's starting to move away from its parents' house in a sense, and we're starting to see that. But at that time, I couldn't only imagine the rough and tumble town and the saloons and hopping from saloon to saloon. And it must have just been a hell of a good time to be there.
Talk about the influence that miners had on this culture. Certainly the Mormon church, the LDS church, had a lot of influence in settling the valley, but there were a lot of passers through and a lot of miners who also influenced the culture here.
You know, pre-Prohibition, it was basically Mormons and miners, and that was that was really what it was in this state. And while Mormons did drink, it wasn't in 1921 is when the Word of Wisdom became more of a law than just a suggestion, and that was right during the middle of Prohibition. So when drinking liquor wasn't just immoral, it was illegal. But miners flooded into this state, obviously, and a lot of people came here searching their fortunes in California, and they stayed in Utah, as we all know, and they liked to drink. So it wasn't so much, we say that there was a lot of alcohol in Salt Lake, but it was really the mining towns. It was these small towns like Alta and Bingham and Corinne. We tell a little story about a mining town just north of Salt Lake called Corinne, and it had 2,500 people in it, but it had over 20 bars and saloons. You know, that's quite a percentage. And it was just a big party town, and the Mormons called it the City of the Ungodly.
I want to play another clip from your film, Beehive Spirits. And this is a man named David Perkins. He is the founder and owner of the High West Distillery in Park City, which distills whiskey. And I thought this was a pretty interesting piece of Utah history that I hadn't heard about. This is Dave Perkins, and then I'll get you to talk about it, Tyler Meeson, from the film Beehive Spirits.
In the 1850s, when the pioneers came, distilling was a way of life. You didn't have anesthesia. You didn't have antibiotics. If you had to cut off a leg, you had whiskey and you poured the whiskey on the wound. So the pioneers made a whiskey called Valley Tan. Valley Tan was slang for a term that meant anything that the pioneers made from scratch.
On a visit to Salt Lake, Mark Twain wrote of the local liquor, the exclusive Mormon refresher. Valley Tan is a kind of whiskey, or first cousin to it, is of Mormon invention and manufactured only in Utah. Tradition says it is made of imported fire and brimstone.
I love that cut. That's from the film Beehive Spirits, Tyler Meeson. So it wasn't just beer here in Utah.
No, it was wine and it was whiskey. And whiskey is the easiest to make of the three, especially in those days. Beer can be difficult, and it's hard to get a cold beer in 1860. But whiskey you can brew pretty easily in a still, and you make it out of corn or potatoes or whatever you need to make it out of. And David Perkins, you know, in addition to talking about the history of alcohol in Utah, we follow some of these individuals who create alcohol now. One of those is David Perkins, and David Perkins is a transplant to Utah, and he was a biologist and had a dream of making a whiskey. So he came to Utah, of all places, because he loves it here, he said. And he started a distillery in Park City, High West, and it's great whiskey, and he makes a really fine product. And in addition to profiling him, we also profile Greg Scherf, who most people will know as the founder of Wasatch Brewery. And then we profile a man named Colin Fryer, and Colin Fryer is an old cowboy who went down to Moab to be a rancher and decided to buy a winery down there. And he makes wine in Moab, Utah, and it's actually pretty good.
And these are the modern pioneers that you like to profile.
Yeah, we call David Perkins a whiskey missionary because he's so ardent about his love for whiskey and pushing it on individuals. Not pushing, that's the wrong word. Suggesting. We call Greg Scherf the beer pioneer, and we call Colin Fryer the wine cowboy. And they are there. They're just these individual spirits that dare do something a little bit different and almost do it in defiance, in the face of authority. And they're beautiful, wonderful, warm and witty people.
Speaking with Tyler Meeson, he's the producer and director of the new documentary Beehive Spirits, which premieres next Tuesday, October 30th, on KUED Channel 7. We've got one of those pioneers with us, Greg Scherf, president of Scherf Brewing Company and head of the Utah Brewers Cooperative, now in studio. And Greg, good morning. Thanks so much for your time.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Greg, how much did you know about making beer before you moved to Utah? You're from Milwaukee, beer capital.
Yes, that kind of plays into the story, Jennifer, but not really an important ingredient to how I migrated to Utah and how I got into the beer business. But yes, grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hi, Tyler, by the way. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, of course, Greg. I didn't know you were there. Yeah. I wouldn't have said such awful things about you.
Too late now. So, yeah, as the story goes, growing up in Milwaukee, went to school in Milwaukee at a university called Marquette University. And I think after graduating, I had a pent-up need to kind of move on, having gone to college in my own hometown. My brother had gone to school in Colorado, and I'd been out to visit him and saw the mountains out west. So when I graduated from college, I said, I'm going out west. And I said to my parents, do you mind if we skip graduation because, you know, I just want to get going? And they had five kids, so they thought that was a pretty cool idea to skip graduation. And so I said, okay, send me my diploma, And my brother had moved from Boulder, Colorado to Park City in 1972. So I didn't have a car. I didn't have much money. I didn't have any money, really. And my parents have been gracious enough to help me through college. But so heading west, I had no choice. My mom took me to the interstate. Today she probably would have been arrested for child endangerment. But in those days, she thought it was just fine. She took me to the freeway where I started hitchhiking to Utah. And before I got out of the car, she had a nickname for me. She called me her Baby Dumpling. She goes, "Baby Dumpling, keep smiling while you're hitchhiking. Nobody wants to pick up a grump." So that was my last advice, and I hitchhiked out to Utah. Been here ever since, and as history has recorded, started Scherf Brewing Company and Wasatch Beers in 1986.
It was an easy thing to do, right? To start a brewery in Utah.
Well, if you didn't get committed, or, you know, right away for even voicing the idea, you know, you could probably keep going. But it was a pretty radical idea. But then I was a radical hippie. I was 20 when I got here. I was 21 in 1986. I was a little older, but I think part of the radicalness of it, and Tyler touched on it, it's the kind of the renegade spirit that you bring out west. And I think it's a little bit akin to what the pioneers had. I mean, they came west and looking for opportunity, looking for a way to find their way in life, looking for a career, looking for something to kind of fulfill their life. So when I came out here, it was different. And living in Park City probably, you know, was a key, because early on I realized that even in Park City, I was a distinct minority in a culture that I didn't fully understand what a minority was before. Growing up white, Catholic, Anglo-Saxon in the Midwest with a well-connected family and friends, and you know, I was part of the majority, and I clearly understood how that worked, whether it was getting a job or, you know, getting help from family and friends and neighbors. Going out to Utah, I really felt that loneliness of just being a minority. I knew that my vote didn't count. I know my political orientation was never going to be a factor. So I had to really decide if I wanted to stay in Utah. So I think being in probably the one non-Mormon enclave in Utah, not the one and only, but one of the few anyway, in Park City. Maybe we could include Price and Moab and others. But being in Park City kind of gave me the security of being in Utah, but not having to deal with some of the day-to-day issues of being a minority. But it still left a chip on my shoulder. And I think the idea of starting a brewery was, okay, what's a Milwaukee boy supposed to do when he finds his way to the land of Zion, where he's told pretty much, you know, he's not part of the decision-making or the culture here? Well, maybe he should just start a brewery. Mm.
We're speaking with Greg Scherf, president of Scherf Brewing Company. Also with us, the producer and director, Tyler Meesom. His latest film, the documentary Beehive Spirits, premieres next Tuesday, October 30th at 8:30 on KUED Channel 7. And there are some additional viewing times as well as links on our website, kcpw.org. Greg, I want to hear more about your experience, but we've got to take a quick break and invite our listeners to join us if you want to know more about the colorful characters and the history of liquor in Utah. Join us at 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Again, we need to take a break. We'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier Pierce. Utah is traditionally considered one of the driest states in the nation, but believe it or not, the state has a rich history in liquor, a past filled with saloons and breweries and imbibing. Things certainly changed after Prohibition, but the last 20 years has seen a resurgence in alcohol production and consumption, from brew pubs to wineries to distilleries. And today on the program, we're talking about this odyssey of liquor in the state with Greg Scherf. He's president of Scherf Brewing Company, head of the Utah Brewers Cooperative. Also with us, Tyler Meesom. He's a filmmaker, the producer and director of the new documentary, Beehive Spirits, which is part of the KUED Utah Now series. It premieres next Tuesday, October 30th. We'll give you details on that as we go. But you can join our conversation as well. What do you want to know about Utah's role in Prohibition or recent entanglements with state lawmakers? Give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Greg Scherf, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the evolution of you becoming the first brewer from many years. Back in 1986, you established a brewery here in Utah again. And one of the hurdles was really getting a popular following. You found that there were roadblocks legally to making this happen.
Yeah, there's really kind of two chapters, Jennifer. The first one, when I gone to Seattle for Thanksgiving one year, I think it was 1985, to meet up with some old college buddies, they said, sure, if you got to come out here, I want you to meet somebody. You always talk about beer. You always talk about how into beer you are and how you want to start a brewery someday. And they all knew that was just a pipe dream when I had too many beers, usually. So they invited me to Seattle to meet a guy named Tom Bond, who's the founder of Pyramid Brewery, who was one of the earliest craft brewers. In those days, it was appropriate to call ourselves microbreweries because we were very micro. We could have been nano breweries. But in those days, we were microbreweries. And I met this guy, Tom Bond, who started Pyramid. And two things kind of clicked when I was in Seattle. One was, here's a guy my age doing what I would consider, you know, my dream career, my dream job. And he also was very generous and said, let me help you get started. You know, I can be your consultant. And he was a very wise guy because he'd been brewing beer for all of 2 years, right? So, but at any rate, we connected. I came back, put together a business plan, and decided I wanted to do it in Utah. And I had planned to start a business at some point. I had been in real estate sales with my brother Skip for a number of years in Park City, and had been somewhat disciplined and saving some money so that when the day came that I could start a business, I had at least some start-up money. But I needed a loan to get really off the ground. And when I went into the banks that I had relationships with from the real estate business, they looked at me like I was just being a smart ass, or they looked at me that I wasn't serious, and then they realized I was serious. They said, no, you know, we can't make a loan on that. So I went through probably a half a dozen loan presentations, trying to convince a local bank to fund the startup of the brewery. And finally went into the smallest federally chartered bank in Utah. It was Brighton Bank in those days. It was on Highland Drive. It had one branch office. A guy named Jim Fraser was the president. I walked in, gave what I thought was a fairly perfunctory presentation because I thought it was such a long shot and I was getting discouraged. And as I finished, he said, that's the best idea I've heard in a while. When do you want the money? So I got a $150,000 loan and went back to Park City and went into action and partnered up with a gal named Melly Pullman, who had an interesting background. She was mostly just a really smart young woman, had a master's in civil engineering, and was intrigued with my business plan of starting a brewery. Her family had been on the E-line side of the family that started the Schlitz, owned the Schlitz Brewery in Milwaukee. So she had some beer blood of her own. So she said, okay, I'm going to go back to school at the Siebel Institute in Chicago to learn more about brewing science, and then I'll come back and we'll get going. And I said, okay, Melly. So she came in and was my original partner and brewmaster. So we not only had the first brewery in Utah in modern times, one of the first breweries out in the Wild West, but certainly the first microbrewery with a female brewmaster, which was pretty cool.
I want to play a clip from the film Beehive Spirits, and this just gives people a sense of what your sense of humor was in your marketing campaign. I mean, as you were trying to popularize locally made brews, these commercials are hilarious. Let me just play a couple clips and then get you to talk about
okay.
it.
I love to pop my top.
You know what we say.
Why have just one?
They didn't think it was as funny as we did. So they raised the beer excise tax on our beer as a punishment for our poor taste. If people are going to raise the beer tax because they don't like our ad campaign, we think that's a pretty fundamental abuse of First Amendment rights. So we thought, well, if that's the way they're going to play, we'll just come out with a new beer called First Amendment Lager.
Pick up a six-pack and exercise your First Amendment rights by saying yes to a great beer.
So you're dressed up. This is for Polygamy Porter. You're in a hot tub surrounded by
yes.
cute young women. the first one was St. Provost girl,
mm-hmm.
And got this really busty, cute
yeah.
girl popping the top.
Yes, Ingrid.
Ingrid, of course. And then finally, the First Amendment lager. and you're dressed up as a patriot.
Yeah, I think I got more political as time went on, but it really was a response. I thought that when we had done some things that, you know, we tried to be irreverent, but it was never our agenda to be offensive. We felt that the things that we pointed to were meant to be humorous first and foremost. And so when our ads were looked at as not fitting in, and we said, well, that's cool, it's a free country and everything. But then the state legislature took it as a point of reference to raise the excise on the beer tax. And just as a reflection of how the state legislature can work sometimes, initially there was a guy that wanted to do it just on our brewery, just on me. And they had to kind of whisper in his ear that you can't just tax one business. You have to tax the whole industry. So they finally decided, okay, we're going to raise the excise taxes, the tax we pay on every barrel of beer. And it was clearly punitive. And I thought, you know, this is really outrageous. You know, it was a little bit of a catfight because they were mad at me, and then I got mad at them. And so we decided that we were going to protest the increase in the excise beer tax. So we all went out to the Great Salt Lake, and it was a wonderful day. It was snowing a little bit, and we had told all the media we were going to be out there to dump beer in the Salt Lake. And we had all these kegs highly pressurized, and we all dressed up in colonial costumes, and we went out to the Great Salt Lake. And sure enough, the media was there to see our antics, and we poured the beer in the Great Salt Lake. And there were some issues about pouring beer in the lake from an environmentalist, and I thought that was a little too much, really, because we thought our beer in the Great Salt Lake was really a net gain environmentally. And, you know, more people out fishing on the weekend would have done more damage putting their used beer back into the lake than we did. And, you know, we thought the brine shrimp would appreciate the beer. So we went ahead and put four kegs into the Great Salt Lake, hoot and hollered. We raised our hands, had the American flag. The sky was just perfect, if any of the photographs you can see on our website. But it was a steely blue sky. The sleet was just easing up, and the sun was coming over the ochres. And we're out there in colonial costumes, and we are totally into it, and screaming things like, give me liberty or give me a cold one. And it was a fun day.
We're speaking with Greg Scherf. He's president of Scherf Brewing Company. He is featured in the new documentary titled Beehive Spirits. We've got the director and producer with us, Tyler Meesom, as well. Tyler, the legal framework that surrounds alcohol in Utah is, you know, poked fun at all the time. People are always trying to change the liquor laws here in the state. Your documentary points out that many of those the tightening regulations are a direct result from the state's role in prohibition.
Yeah, and we made an intentional decision not to include contemporary politics at this point, because it's just, you know, there's just so much, and it's ever-changing. And from the time we started the film, there's actually been a quite a decent advance in alcohol in the state, more licenses and opening of pubs in residential areas. So we kind of stayed away from contemporary politics and kind of focused on the politics of the past. And when Prohibition was enacted, and there's a great story in the film about how Utah was the 36th state to repeal Prohibition. It's a beautiful story. And afterwards, it granted the states the right to license alcohol. And the state, at that point, took control of it a little bit. And it was at that point that the state, slash a lot of people think the church as well, really controlled the flow of alcohol in the state of Utah. And from that time on, it's been kind of an uphill battle for those who wish to imbibe here in the Beehive State. Mm.
What are you hoping? I mean, you didn't want to get into all of the debate of what's swirling around right now, but Tyler Meesom, I mean, what are you hoping that viewers take away from your film?
Well, we didn't go into it with a set agenda. And anytime a film has a set agenda and tries to preach to you, you know, I think it turns people away automatically. We really just wanted to show that within this state, look, every time I travel around the country, I always say, oh, I live in Salt Lake City. And they go, oh, Salt Lake, that's, what are you doing there? And then they ask the inevitable question, are you Mormon? And I'm not. But they, you know, they don't really know Salt Lake, and I kind of have to say it's a vibrant, brilliant, beautiful city that supports the arts and the community, and there's a gay community, and there's restaurants and bars, and it's just a beautiful, vibrant place. And I kind of wanted to just show that it's been that way, and it's always been that way, and there's always been this dissenting voice against the you know, the higher ups trying to do nothing more than get a drink, or in Greg Sherp's case, just to start a business. Greg just wants to start a business and make beer, and it may as well be making cakes or cookies. And he's being held back in some ways. So I don't really go into it with an agenda more than just kind of a, it's more of a, just a comical character piece infused with history.
And in the film, Greg Sherp, you talk about beer making as your contribution to the local culture.
Yeah, it was my way of maybe offering some diversity. You know, I consider myself somewhat political, and I felt that, you know, the monolithic type culture that Utah had been offering just needed some diversity. And I think that was a big attraction to me, was to do something that wasn't being offered and that was, you know, not just needed, you know, as a business venture and providing local beer that's fresh and made here in Utah, but I also was trying to make a statement of sorts, saying, you know, we don't have to be strictly a minority culture.
What have you learned during your journey?
I've learned there's a fine line between being a smart ass and a dumb ass, and sometimes I cross the line.
Tyler, tell us a little bit about your latest project that you're working on in L.A.
Well, I'm doing a feature-length documentary called An Honest Liar, and it's about James the Amazing Randy, who was a world-famous magician and then became a debunker of paranormal claims. And he went after faith healers and psychics and mentalists. He's an 84-year-old gay man who is still ardent and fervent and trying to get these charlatans off the streets, if you will. It's a beautiful, brilliant story, and I it won't be done for a while, but it's an amazing film.
If there's a common thread, it sounds like rebellion.
In a sense, yeah. And if you watch on my last film, Sons of Perdition, it follows these kids who were kicked out of the FLDS and who have to kind of make it on their own and kind of defy a culture. They kind of defy what everything they were taught and kind of try to make it against that. So, yeah, I guess if you wanted to say I have a theme, you could easily point that out. Yeah.
Greg Sherp, is that a theme you can embrace?
Yeah. I've always had kind of an authority hang up. The nuns used to tell my parents at parent-teacher conferences that, yeah, Greg just, you know, really has a problem with authority. And then when I became a, you know, protesting hippie in the late 60s and 70s and, you know, throwing tear gas back at the police and carrying on, I guess I had a bit of a rebellious attitude towards authority.
Do you feel like you've, since 1986 when you founded the brewery, things have gotten easier for you as a brewmaster?
Well, there's a number of different chapters, Jennifer, about what we had to do to survive and how we overcame certain obstacles. One big story that I think I'll try to give you the condensed version is that in 1988, we weren't really surviving. We were having fun as a brewery, selling a lot of T-shirts and had plenty of beer to take home, but really weren't making any money. Melly was going to move on and go back to being a college professor. And at that point, I realized that I had to do something with my business if I was going to survive. So I had heard about this brew pub concept in California, and I explored it. And I went back down to the Department of Alcohol and Beverage Control and said, listen, I want to open this thing that's called a brew pub, where you make the beer right on premise and you sell it right to the customer and you don't have to package it or ship it, or it's just fresh right to the customer. And they looked at me and they said, you can't do that. I said, well, why can't I do that? And they said, well, there's what's called a three-tier system or a tied house law, where a brewer sells to a wholesaler, or a wholesaler sells to a retailer. And I wanted to circumvent that. Actually, going back to the turn of the century when they actually came up with the laws for a pretty good reason. So I said, okay, well, I'll just change the law. And they looked at me and said, we knew you were crazy before. Now we know, you know, you're really off your rocker. But I went back to Park City, talked to my local legislative representative, a guy named Glenn Brown, who said, listen, I can't sponsor your bill, Greg, but I will support it. Short story, I got the bill written and found it. I said, well, who's going to sponsor my bill? And he goes, well, that's easy. There's only one guy in the whole state legislature that would support a beer bill. And his name is Mike Dimitrik. He's from Price, Utah, and he's the only guy that would possibly do it. So I called up Mike Demetric, and I said, you don't know who I am, but I want to sponsor, I have you sponsor a bill that would change the beer law in Utah. And he goes, I know they told you to call me, didn't they? I'm like, we'll never win, Greg, but let's do it anyway. We'll have some fun, but let's just go ahead and do it. Short story is Mel Brown said he'd support the bill. He fortuitously was appointed Speaker of the House that session, which is a very powerful position. And he kept his word as the good man that he is, supported the bill, and we somehow got it through before anybody really knew what a brew pub was. So,
and the rest is history.
The rest, if I was to try to hang my hat on any single accomplishment, it would be that I was just dumb enough and lucky enough to get the brew pub law changed. And so now there's quite a few brew pubs in Utah.
The things you've done because you're dumb enough, Greg.
That's just one of the great stories that's in the new documentary, Beehive Spirits. Tyler Meesom is producer and director. Greg Scherf, president of Scherf Brewing Company. Thanks to you both very much for your time today.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's been fun.
Jennifer, please note that it will be shown at Brewies on Monday night. They're going to do a screening with Greg and me and Colin Fryer. And
whiskey's coming.
And answering questions. So,
okay, good. Good to know.
And I believe there'll be beer there, I suspect.
You think? Well, we'll put that on our website as well, kcpw.org. Again, Beehive Spirits premiering next Tuesday, October 30th. There's an event Monday night at Brewies. We'll have all the details at kcpw.org. Coming up next, science from the forefront of science, a new science news service. But first, a break. This is City Views on KCPW, Salt Lake City.